And I'm delighted to announce our speaker.
First something.
Yeah.
It's on.
Oh, first, Sosan would like to say some words in highlight.
Got a short tail.
They're kind of longish words, so if you want to have a seat.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm Sosan, the guiding teacher here, and I would like to just say a few words about what's happened in Minnesota over the last couple of days. So we are grieving Minnesota State House Speaker Emeritus Melissa Hortman and her husband Mark, who were shot and killed early yesterday morning. And we're praying for State Senator John Hoffman and his wife Yvette, who are also shot and are hopefully recovering. So this is a very difficult time, and I just want to offer that this is a time that we can be here for each other, be here with all the feelings that arise, the grief, fear, anger, trauma. So just being here for each other and being here with our own feelings and whatever's coming up for us. And the question might arise, how do we make sense of this as Buddhists? And the first thing that comes to mind for me is that we don't. It's senseless. And that is one truth. The other truth is that these things happen because of causes and conditions. So we can see, you know, all the different things that go into an occurrence like this, a tragedy like this happening. From the all of the things that went into the killer's life and mind, to our culture of violence, to the proliferation of guns. There's just many, many causes and conditions, so we can know that. And I think it's also important to not let that explanation numb us to our feelings. So we can have an explanation, but then we can also say it's senseless. And then the other suggestion is to not let the strong emotions, also not let those numb us to other emotions that may be arising, to other realities that may be arising. Don't get stuck there, in other words. Keep being with what is arising and let things arise in ourselves. And if there is a call to action in this, let it arise from our deep seeing and our wide view. And I also want to let everyone know that the teachers at Clouds and Water are available to, as always, to meet with you for practice meetings to help you on your spiritual journey with whatever is coming up. So that's what I wanted to say to you this morning. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Sosan. I should go off my notes. So, this Sunday's Dharma Talk is given by Flying Fish Barbara Murphy. Currently living in Portland, Oregon, Flying Fish rejoins Clouds and Water from Dharma Rain Zen Center. She was ordained in 2005 by Diane Martin in Udambara Zen Center in Evanston, Illinois, and transmitted by Byakaran Judith Regeer at Clouds and Water in 2015. From 2005 to 2018, Flying Fish was a teacher at Clouds and Water Zen Center, where she helped advance the youth and family program. She completed her certified pastoral education in 2006 and worked as a hospital chaplain at Abbott Northwestern Hospital and as a hospice chaplain at Alina Hospice. Since 2019, she has been practicing at Dharma Rain, where she now serves as a transmitted teacher. Her background includes a BA in art history and a master's in architecture. She lives with her husband and enjoys family life.
Thank you, Sosan, for those wise words. Wow. I feel really tender this morning, and it really helped. I love the putting together the senselessness of it, and also the particular of the knowing the causes and conditions we're all mixed in with us. It feels so good to be here this morning, be held by the Sangha. I'm feeling a little tender, a little teary. Also, the compassionless, you know, this is your home, so you're swimming in it, but I don't get that at Dharma Rain, the beautiful compassion, the way it's read here, the invitation to hold those, hold that in such a prayerful way. And in a way, this talk this morning is about great suffering that's held by great happiness. And the talk I'm giving down at Hokkyoju, where I'm going to be in retreat with people, is about Dogen's connection of that great happiness and that great samsara. I was reminded, I was in Dogesan with my teacher, and I was going on about something, and, you know, suffer, suffer, suffer. And I wanted her to fix it. And I remember plain as day, she looked at me and she said, "Yes, samsara's endless. Samsara's endless." And it was like I heard it for the very first time. Like, oh my God, it is endless. It has always been here, and it always will. And it is also always held with each moment that is fresh and new. Each moment, the lived moment, is always fresh and new. And in that, that you can feel that joy coming up, the birth of the possibilities of this moment. So the talk I'm going to give today was kind of the introduction to what we'll be talking about in Hokkyoju. And I'm sorry we'll miss you there. For those of you who are not going, it's a fascicle written by Dogen. Dogen lived in the early 1200s in Japan, and is actually kind of the father of our lineage. And the fascicle is Daigo. It's called Daigo. It's often translated as great realization. So that great suffering and that great happiness held together. And the fascicle goes on to discuss how do we, how are we to be with this, and how does it impact our life, this great happiness and great suffering. So Daigo translates as great enlightenment, great realization, or sometimes Satori. And it's our ability to realize a truth that is beyond our normal understanding. Often when we sit, we tend to like, oh yes, I, you know, experience some relief, and then we go and turn on the news and we experience great fear or whatever the emotion might be, and there's kind of this waffling back and forth between these experiences. And that's kind of a common experience. So great realization, or great enlightenment is both the undifferentiated whole, or that well of ease and peace and harmony, and the particular of our situation today. And in meditation, we get a taste of this sometimes, and we grow this loving connection through our actions. So as we act in the world, we see that great peace and ease that we cultivate in our meditation practice, and we're able to hold that samsara, hold that suffering, as Sosan suggested we do, to be, not run away from it, but not be engulfed by it and become incapacitated. And that fine line, there was another clue in that what she offered us is in, we do it together. We help each other out. We don't have to do this alone. We can't really do it alone. We don't do it alone. We don't live in isolation. We live together. So these communities, this community right here, and those of you online, very important. It's very important. So great realization or enlightenment is something that is often talked about in Buddhism. And what is it? Well, we don't, can't really talk about it, which makes this really hard. You know, have some pity on us. Because as soon as you say, it's this, guess what? That's not it. No matter what you say, no matter how big your language is, it's not it. Because it's changing all the time. The, in the compassion stuff, the impermanence of it, we're always changing. So to say it's it is to fix that moment, and there's samsara as soon as you do it. So don't do that. So, but it is characterized by ancestors with deep understanding and who they are in the world, about who they are and about the world around them. And we can see this manifested in great bodhisattvas, you know, like Gandhi or Martin Luther King, or we have examples of that. And we can see it, and we understand, you know, but we can't pinpoint it. It is marked by calm abiding, a joyful heart. Joyful heart. Happy to be in the world, doing the work of the bodhisattva. A magnanimous mind is a characteristic. So they don't get caught in the particulars. They see them, but don't get caught in them. And in a chaotic world like this, great realization is sought after by spiritual seekers like us. I wrote down here, it's a little heartbreaking that this talk was given in 800 years ago, and here we are, right? Still. So what they're describing is something great and big. The title of the fascicle can be translated a couple of different ways, and in Chinese, oh, that was funny when I plugged my nose. Shoshu is how it gets translated, and that's, and that gets translated cause and result. So as we meditate, as we experience that spaciousness, the result is we get to bring it into our daily life. We get to have that spaciousness to not react. We have that spaciousness to hold that door open for the mom in the stroller. We can see it. And as we do that action, bring that action into the world, then we get that immediate feedback. We feel that generosity of spirit. And we get a positive feedback for that, and then we motivates our practice. So the cause and result, or sometimes it's translated as practice verification. So as we practice our meditation, as we spend time here and we talk to our teachers and we spend time with each other, we start to see that our life is changing and how we're looking at things is changing, that it's real. It's a lived teaching. It's just not words on a paper. If it's just words on the paper, it wouldn't have lasted this long. We would have abandoned it. Dogen was very interested in the relationship between life as we live it and life as we understand it, as the way to bring forth great realization. Another translation might be dream or fantasy, and we wake up to it and see reality. Our thought, we see through our thoughts about reality, which is a dream, or to not know where we are going, lost in confusion. I experienced that a lot in my early life. I remember thinking, someone must know what's going on because this is a mess. And I thought it was an education, but that didn't turn out to be. Sorry. All right. But being lost because, okay. So enlightenment refers to a state of understanding or awareness that transcends ordinary perception. So whatever we are seeking, whether it's understanding or calmness, relief, or just a bit of kindness, this is a much bigger than we might have anticipated. When we meditate, it does not take long for us to actually experience a better life in some ways. Just calming the mind. Just calming the mind gives us some relief, but unfortunately it's short-lived. To great realization or great enlightenment is to radically change our life view, and by doing so we fundamentally change how we act in the world and how we understand reality. How long does this go on for?
Until about 10:18.
10:18,
okay.
Shorter.
I do our question and answers.
As long as you go.
Okay. Actually, I cut a lot out of it so we would have time for question and answers. So we listen to the teachings of the Buddhas and the ancestors, and they give us clues about this path. That's what we're doing when we go to classes here, when we listen to the Dharma talks, when we watch the Bodhisattvas in action. It is a life journey. This doesn't happen. So a lot of things about enlightenment is people think it's something you go out and get, that it's outside of you. But actually, we're born with Buddha nature. If you work with kids, they just intrinsically get it. Unfortunately, it gets lost in the to-do list that they have. But we intrinsically understand it. That's why we're drawn to it. So we do this and we practice it and we bring it into our lives, and what happens is we just get an expanded awareness of the teachings and this great suffering and great joy that has to coexist. And living out the precepts, we learn how to live in harmony in our world. So this has a big impact on each other. Of course, we have had insights, each of us, in our own life, and I don't want to dismiss that. This insight makes our lives better. I asked my husband that, you know, if I asked that question to you, what might he say? And he said, "Do not indulge in anger." That's what he said back, and I said, "Death is not to be feared," might be an insight. No one owns the truth. That might be an insight. Might be kind of nice when we are in the community room to share an insight that you have with each other. Because it's our collective knowledge. It's our that brings us wisdom. And we each have our own, because we each have our own particular life. Suzuki Roshi points to this Buddha nature that we all, as a part of who we are. And he describes it like this. We all have Buddha nature, or the knowing of the true reality of existence. After all, we are part of nature. He says, because we have Buddha nature, you already have great enlightenment. You already are swimming in it. You are already a part of it. There is enlightenment in your practice. It could not be otherwise. Practice is how we actualize our Buddha nature. Please have strong confidence in your Buddha nature and sincerity in your practice. If we practice Zazen meditation, we should practice with the sincerity of a Buddha, as if we are already Buddha. We should practice walking like a Buddha. We should practice eating like a Buddha. We should practice sleeping or talking like a Buddha. That's a pretty tall order. But nonetheless, we try. You might ask, how does a Buddha walk or talk? And we should investigate this. Get curious and practice. So, what I'm pointing at in this talk is in Buddhism, the two truths. There's the relative world, or the world of our senses, how we take in the world, and how our mind reacts to it. We respond with our feelings or emotions, the known world that can be measured and does exist in a timeline. In Buddhism, this world includes our thoughts. Our mind is considered our sixth sense, which I always thought was really interesting. But the second truth is the reality of the ultimate, or the absolute, or the beyond reality that goes beyond birth and death, that has always been here and always will be. And we're a part of that. Beyond our typical understanding, it is outside of time and space. It's an undifferentiated wholeness and is characterized by peaceful, harmonious, and joyful. So these two realities interact with each other and inform each other and change. In fact, they are intimately intertwined. So there is a priest that's in our community called Kato. And her name means twining vines, just like a wine vine. That's what it's talking about, this intimate relationship that we're trying to learn about when we practice our spiritual path. Like twining vines, or in Daigo, Dogen uses the image of a cotton ball. Closely wrapped around each other, and then we just kind of pull it apart. And of course, when we pull it too far, there's nothing there. We don't want to go that far, but we want to pull it apart so we can breathe. So my teacher used the word ventilation. That was really helpful to me, to ventilate my experience when it was overwhelming. This image is used within human relationships, because with this relationship, we have many different experiences, both lovely, painful, love, hatred, tight or loose, child and parent, student and teacher, delusion and enlightenment, and they interact with each other. So I brought this picture. This is one of Shohaku Komura's favorite things. But one image, you might see a young woman. And in the other image, you might see an old woman. And it's kind of like this. And our mind works such that we see either the young or we see the old. But we kind of just flip back and forth between it. It's the way our mind works. It's our biology. It's the nature of our mind. I remember Lee Lewis explained it one time. He was saying, it's like walking through the woods and you're just kind of walking down the path and you're just like, oh. And then you hear a bird call that you want. And we have to do both. We walk through the world, we have to be able to do that. We have to see the stop sign. We have to operate that way. We also can know that this is also present in each and every moment, but we forget. I forget. And part of my practice is just to remember. It's not just because I'm old. It has always been that way. So another way that our teaching sometimes describes it is they don't interfere with each other. So sometimes they describe it as a big open sky, and the sky doesn't interfere with the clouds. The clouds come and they go. Come and they go. And the sky is not bothered by the clouds. And the clouds are not bothered by the sky. So those are kind of some images you can work with for those of you who work with images. So the important aspect of this is the interbeing of all things. So to pull the thread of the cotton ball is to change the character of the whole cotton ball. So as I'm sitting here, you're impacting me. And I am impacting you. Because you're sitting still, if nothing else. We naturally are having impacts on each other. And you want to respect that. So it is at once the same and different. The spaciousness we cultivate in our meditation gives us room to see the world from different points of view. The larger view opens to more options, more choices, more ways to respond. It is sometimes called a panoramic view. When you have, as you practice, your capacity to hold both and be aware of both continues to grow. And there are many, many practices in our tradition that help us to do this. So I wanted to offer just one of the things that was offered in Daigo, which was the festival I'm working with, so that you might see how someone might digest each moment by just thinking about this and practice noticing how this appears in your life. So they're called the five eyes. This is from the Diamond Sutra, actually. The first eye is called the flesh eye. The second is called divine or heavenly eye. The third is the wisdom eye or prajna. And the dharma eye and Buddha eye. So the bodhisattva, which is us, on the path of becoming a Buddha. So as we practice walking and talking like a Buddha, we might see with flesh eyes is one of the ways we see. And these are our everyday eyes, just as you might expect, our eye organ. And we can see the material world with that. It sees the near but not the far. It sees the front but not the back. It sees the outside but not the inside, the top but not the bottom. It only sees parts of points of view. And that's why we talk about delusion so much. Because first we want to wake up to that. First we want to wake up to the fact that we only at any time have a very limited view. And then there's the divine eye. And this divine eye sees both the near and far, and top and bottom, so forth. And is aware of the world in a holistic way, but not yet true reality. So when Sosan was mentioning the causes and conditions, you know, we might be reacting to the tragedy, but then are we remembering that we have these laws that allow for violence in our community? Do we have, she brought out the violence, and there you might take it to the media, all the violence in our media. But anyway, that's kind of what we're talking about then. You kind of see the near and far. The divine eye only sees conditioned reality and the fabricated world that results from causes and condition. It does not see the emptiness of things, empty of perception. It can't see no coming and no going, or arising and perishing, or past and future. Hence, the bodhisattva seeks the prajna eye, or the wisdom eye. The wisdom eye sees the emptiness of all beings. So it sees that space between the thread and the cotton ball. It sees that, has room for that, and it sees it as the negative space. It doesn't differentiate all beings and is free of attachment and self-clinging, which is very restful. But it cannot liberate beings because there is no distinction and no discrimination. So we can experience that in our meditation, but we have to learn how to bring it into our life. Therefore, it does not help others to liberate their suffering. So it's good for us. Actually, that was another experience I had with my teacher. I just told her I had this like beautiful experience, spaciousness, and I went in, and it was this, and I saw that, and I saw that. And at the end of it, I went, and she just let me go on. And at the end of it, she said, "That's very good for you." But I couldn't do anything with it.
Right.
Right? I had to learn. That was, wake up. So then the bodhisattva seeks, this is what most people think of when they think of enlightenment. I did want to bring this out. They experience relief from their suffering and do not feel pulled as hard or as much from the conditions of the world. But it is not what the teachings are pointing at. This is only halfway there. It's like playing at the entrance gate in the Fukan Zanzengi. Or it is like the Magic City in the Lotus Sutra, where it's like an oasis, a rest, and we need it. We need it so that we can continue our work, our journey. And hence, the bodhisattva seeks the Dharma eye. The Dharma eye enables a bodhisattva to cultivate Dharma and to realize the path of expedient means. It discerns the differences, but is limited in its ability to use expedient means, or I might say clear action. But it is, you know, continuing to grow. And therefore, the bodhisattva seeks the Buddha eye. This is the perfect eye. But we are already Buddha, so you don't have to worry. We can get there. Nothing is unknown to the Buddha eye. Nothing. Although it might be obstructed, it sees everything. So that's like when you're doing something and your gut says, something's not right. It sees directly and it sees clearly. We might seem distant or confusing to others, is clear to the Buddha eye. It illuminates all dharmas, and the result is skillful means. that's the end. So a lot of people think of this as kind of a stepladder, right? I got the flesh eye, now I understand what they're talking about for the divine eye or the prajna eye. But Dogen is insistent, and I really want to make this clear, that at all times we have all five eyes, all the time. We're just not used to using them. That's all. So that's why we want to learn and practice and listen to the Dharma and listen to our Dharma sisters and brothers, and we want to pay attention to what's happening so we can cultivate this. So I'm going to end my talk and open it up to discussion with a quote from the text that we're studying from. This is the very last line of it. The great realization of Buddhas is realizing great realization for the sake of all living beings. And the great realization of living beings is greatly realizing the great realization of Buddhas. Aren't you glad you're not coming? It cannot be related to before and behind. It cannot. That is in the past, is behind. It is not lived. This moment is our lived moment, the only moment. And it is not before. So it is not in the future. Great realization now is beyond self and beyond others. It does not come and it does not go. Why is that so? Because we follow objects perfectly with our five eyes, completely harmonized with circumstances in our life. Thank you very much.
The floor is open for questions, comments, or fish. We have a few minutes, so. Yeah, we have a question.
No, it's a comment. It's about a conversation that I have with Sosan long, long, long time ago, like before the pandemic, when I used to come here have some meetings with her, and I was talking about something happy that happened to me, and she said, well, that's good because that will sustain you in difficult times. Mm-hmm. And I never forgot that, because then after that they came very difficult times, you know. So mm-hmm. So maybe some a matter of balance between happiness and suffering, you know, because we need both, maybe, but just in the balance, you know.
I love that you brought that up, and you do want to remember.
Can you repeat what she said?
Oh, so okay. She was talking about a conversation she had with Sosan, in which she was describing a moment of joy, great happiness, and she said, "Well, that is good because that will sustain you in difficult times." And it is good for us to always remember, you know. Those moments, if you isn't called out, the life span for those in our memory is excessively short. Like a positive comment or something lasts, they say, between 10 and 15 seconds.
But a negative comment
can last years. I still replay things from junior high. So you have to learn to kind of tap into those. I think that's really a good point. It's like the Magic City. You don't want to dismiss those moments. They're important to sustain you, because difficult times are ahead. Hello.
I just finished reading the book that Bishop Buddy read, wrote. I don't know if any of you are familiar with her. Most recently, she was in the news for being the one asking Trump for mercy from the church. And her book is called How We Learn to Be Brave.
Oh.
It's very beautiful. And she talks about her own experiences of how real consolation and desolation both are. And how to hold both of those. That in times of desolation, we question whether the consolation, the parts where we felt were so alive and full and precious, we question that those weren't even real. And I've been there. And so I was really encouraged that, like, it reminds me of what we talk about in practice about being able to hold both and to remember both and that they're both real.
Yes.
It really helped me.
Yes. And learning to see it come alive in your life, that capacity to do so is so sustaining and so fruitful for skillful means. Yeah.
Hi. So nice to hear you and see you in person. When you talk about the five I's, and then I think about your work as a chaplain, can you say about how the eye and the heart are connected?
You actually see with the heart. You know, in Buddhism, I just learned this not too long ago, but actually in Buddhism, the you know how the eye and then the eye organ and you know eye no and smell and nose organ. Well, then there's the mind and the mind organ, and don't you think brain, right? Mm-hmm. In Buddhism, it's your heart. Mm-hmm. You listen and hear and feel and think with your heart. That's the brain organ, the mind organ. So, when you're listening, you know, to suffering on that scale, and there's not often it wasn't just you and patient, it was the family was there too. And it was interesting because you had to act with the what eyes they were using.
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes they were just using the flesh eye, so then you had to talk with the language of the flesh eye. So when you're listening to somebody talk, listen to what eye they're using. And then you can connect. It's the connection that is alive. Where the great realization is going to be found is that connection. If you're talking with a Buddha eye, or Buddha eye kind of sees it all, so like a wisdom eye, they can't hear you. They can't connect to you. So even though your heart might be present to it, you have to learn that you have to learn to go for connection. That, and that's actually nonviolent communication. Go for connection first. And that's really hard to do when someone's saying something they really object to. Because you want to set them straight. And now you lost. You lost them.
And I think we are out of time. So
thank you
very much.
Yes, thank you all. Thank you for being here.